Welcome to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements of Drab to Fab Landscaping. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas to help solve problems and keep you up to date on the latest development in the nursery and landscape industry. For a podcast of today's program and others, visit walteranderson.com and click on the podcast tab. Now, here's your host.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements. We'll be here for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. If you have a question for us, would like to comment on the show, or have a suggestion for a topic or a guest you would like to hear about, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com or follow us on the Walter Anderson Nursery Facebook main page. Morning, guys.
Good morning.
We've got classes today in San Diego. It's going to be Grow Like a Pro with Richard. That's going to be at 9 o'clock. At 9:30 in Poway, it's going to be Creative Rainwater Capture in the Residential Garden with Brad Lefkowitz, who we've had on the show.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yes. So it should be both should be very good classes, very interesting classes. My advice is always to get there a little bit early to make sure you get parking and get a good seat.
And a cup of coffee.
All
the classes are always good.
Yeah, we certainly try.
It's a great service.
Yeah, yeah. George does a really good job in the Poway store getting interesting topics and interesting guests.
We try to mix it up.
Yeah. We have a special guest with us today on the show. Roy Wilburn, better known as Farmer Roy in these parts, is here with us, and he's from Poway. He's the garden manager, I guess you could call it, at Poway Gardens. That's it. Director of horticulture.
Oh, okay. A director.
That's what this year's name tag says.
I like
promoted.
Welcome to the show, Roy.
Hi, being here. You guys are awesome.
Thanks. I should say welcome back, because we have had you on the show before.
Always happy to come.
Yeah. When we finished up last week's show, we were talking about stuff that you should be doing in your garden. Your vegetable garden specifically, because this is the time of year that things should be well underway. Not too late to plant if you don't mind starting a little behind.
But hurry.
But we'll catch up. you still plenty of stuff out there that you can do. And Roy, that's basically what you do out at Poway Gardens is.
Strong advocates of successive planting. So, yes, our tomatoes went in early March, but we'll come back and plant some in June. I actually used to plant some in May and April, but the kitchen said, come on, take it easy. So I have the task of trying to get our tomatoes extended through August. So by then, my June plantings will be kicking in, and then we try to end the year in a bang.
Well, if you planted tomatoes in early March and we had a relatively mild winter, so I doubt anything froze, you should be getting close to harvest at this point.
Right? I have 1-inch fruit. I was going through my numbers a couple days ago, and we're about 3 weeks behind. I mean, yes, it was a mild winter, but we're still waiting for sunlight. Yeah. I mean, we're still waiting for stuff to get really moving. Peppers are still just sitting there, but we're hoping for a change. I got a feeling that what's going to really happen is August is going to be deadly. August is going to be really hot.
Well,
so
remind our audience how big of a tomato crop do you produce typically in a year?
We'll plant somewhere around 500 plants. I have like 237 tomatoes from my early planting, and I think 37 are for the gophers. So I got about 200 there, and then we'll end the year with a couple hundred more.
And that'll produce how much?
We strive for 25 pounds per plant, which is easier on the early plantings than it is on the late plantings. That's why we really go strong at the end of the year to strive to have tomatoes for Christmas. Wow. And then by then, I'm knee-deep in broccoli, cauliflower, bok choy, and things like that.
How large is your planting area?
We have roughly 40, 50-foot rows. So, and we'll do almost 25. We'll do around 25,000 pounds a year for our residents.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
That's a lot of veggies.
That's a lot of veggies, but we'll stockpile tomatoes for marinara the 6 months of the year we don't have them, and hopefully have some broccoli soup when the 6 months we don't have those. We'll be wrapping up our harvest on all our brassicas generally by the first week of June, but I got a feeling it's going to drift a little bit further into June. Again, something's weird in the climate right now, but
as you mentioned, it was a mild winter, but it's a slow start to the warm season.
We had a couple of days of 80 degrees that got me all excited, but then
it has been overcast. Then that
disappeared. Yeah, and then we've been getting 70s, and then next week we're going to drop down to 60 again, and threat of rain this weekend, but I don't think it's going to happen. June gloom has been like April and May.
Yeah, it really has. It really has.
Well, you know, last week, John was talking about fertilizing and iron and zinc and such. What do you do this time of the year as we approach June for fertilizing?
Again, if we're planting, we just have a very established formula for our prepping of our beds. Peppers need a little kick in the pants, so we'll side dress and do a little stuff with our peppers to keep them moving. I'm finally starting to fertilize our tomatoes. So we fertilize tomatoes like as soon as we see like a half inch fruit, we'll give it a big shot. And then when those half inch fruit are full size and starting to color up, then I tell people to fertilize every 2 weeks after that, but I never get around to it. But that's a good practice, I've heard. So
for the folks at home, what are you using to fertilize and how are you applying it? Uh-huh. And I love the term side dressing, by the way. I mean, that's
it's
beautiful.
Old. I mean, we were so intensive. I used to grow in Baja. Our fertilization regime was just extremely intensive and very scientific. And I've gotten back to just old school side dress. Just get a hoe in there, throw some stuff in and cover it up. To answer your question, my go-to fertilizers now, since Grow Power is still dragging their feet a little bit, I love that stuff. And I make a little special concoction with that. But
are you using Grow Power Plus with the humic acid and the soil penetrant?
I like the 312-12.
312-12. That's the flower in bloom.
I like the 312-12, especially for things like cherry tomatoes and just stuff we're trying to, you know, develop good all-around fruit quality. It's really good with the peppers. Not 100% organic, but we won't tell anybody. It's close enough in my book. So, and we use that quite a bit on our deciduous fruit trees, and then the 531's really good for the citrus.
So you're applying that as a side dressing, just kind of banked around.
Everything's linear in my garden, so we'll side dress. The process right now is we're getting rid of weeds. And then generally most of the things we plant, such as our tomatoes and the brassicas, we plant lettuce in between every week. So our residents have fresh romaine every week. And when that comes out, we weed and then do some fertilization of some sort, depending on what we're trying to do. If we're trying to push the plant or just trying to get more fruit to go.
I'm just listening to him saying, we weed. Last week's show, all of that stuff you could have been harvesting for the kitchen, right?
Yeah.
All those crops that we never heard of that people were eating, just eating those weeds.
Yeah. Well, and then this time of year, too.
How many dandelions can you also
That's true. Plus. But the gophers start off right now, too. It seems like they are really...
the worst year I've ever had in my life.
It's terrible.
Absolute worst year with gophers. And I've been battling them since like November.
Wow.
And in fact, all of our stuff that we plant, the crops that we plant in the cool season, we generally cover with white floating row cover to create more heat and to keep insects off. But it's a surprise, like when you open up the row cover and you go, the owl didn't find that gopher decimated that row. So I've had to cover with shade cloth, shade cloth, which is contrary to what my thinking is, where we're trying to heat things up, we're actually kind of cooling it down. So maybe this 3-week lag I have is because I'm not getting that intense push on the plants. But our stuff's starting to come in. We got zucchini now, and again, we have lettuce on a weekly basis. We'll have brassicas through June, up until mid-June, it looks like right now. So, and then by June, hopefully the peppers are kicking, and we'll have tomatoes, and then I got some eggplant in, and the zucchini's been going for a while, so.
Are you getting fruit already from your zucchini?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Well, generally, again, we started about a week and a half ago harvesting zucchini, but that also was 3 weeks behind because I generally plant that in February. Mm. And with the white floating row cover, there's occasionally we have to replant, but I got about 180 zucchini in right now.
Wow. Gold. And do you ever plant the varieties that are high flower production? Just so I'm so into doing zucchini blossoms.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff them with cheese.
There you go.
Little egg, and then saute those babies. Oh,
yeah.
My Lord.
That was like my Sicilian grandmother. She would she would make these like little oregano pancakes with zucchini blossoms, and it's they never left the. It never got to the table. We'd all huddle around the stove, and it was delicious.
So have you ever done specific varieties for higher flower production?
I'll tell you, No. The two varieties I use for a green zucchini is one called Dunja, D-U-N-J-A. I get the seed from Johnny's. It is touted as powdery mildew resistant, and it's a smaller, compact plant. We're looking for resistance as much as we can in the world of organics. And then there's one called Golden Glory that I really love, and that's a gold zucchini, and that has powdery mildew resistance. And
are you saying that with hesitation?
Say it with hesitation because, you know, with like 65 degrees to 90 degrees with 50%+ humidity, you are very susceptible to powdery mildew, which in our area, powdery mildew and aphids are the foes that we keep an eye on. And powdery mildew is a tough one. Powdery mildew is a tough one. I mean, all of our early zucchini will start to peter out in June. Well, now maybe July. And then I follow up with another strong planting at the end of the year. But once you get powdery mildew, I mean, you if you're diligent, I mean, there are ways to control it organic or curb it organically, but you got to do it every day.
It's a tough one. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ, and our special guest, Roy Wilburn from Poway Gardens. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements, and our special guest, Roy Wilburn, better known as Farmer Roy from Poway Gardens, director of horticulture there, as we were informed today. We were talking about zucchini when we went into the break, and you know that when it gets ready to, when you're about ready to produce, that's one that you really have to keep an eye on, because if you miss harvesting by a day or two, you're going to go from a perfectly sized zucchini to a baseball bat.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. We, this time of year, we just started, but we harvest twice a week right now. And then when things warm up, we'll go to three times a week. And, but again, powdery mildew is the foe that's coming, and our big nemesis that's coming up. And, just the only tip I really have is to, when you harvest a fruit, cut a couple old leaves off, because that's where the powdery mildew will start. And in theory, I've seen it in my gardens years past, where like you can actually get like a 4-foot zucchini plant, and it's just this just cable with where we've harvested all the leaves off, and then you just keep the flowering part growing at the end.
Yeah, they do. I wouldn't say it vines, but it definitely stretches out.
Creeps.
Yeah,
it creeps.
It creeps.
Yeah, yeah, if you left all those leaves on that, forget it. The plant would die.
Oh, yeah. You have to take the leaves off as you go. And then it's shocking, too, how a zucchini can double its size every single day.
Oh, yeah.
I used to let them grow really big, and I'd make them into dugout canoes.
That's when you find people that leave their car windows open, and you just start like donating zucchini everywhere.
I would take those that I failed to harvest yesterday, and now they're 4.5 feet. I threw those in the chicken coop. I'd break them in half, and there chickens love them. What size do you typically harvest those for?
Well, in the commercial world, they would call them a little bit more than fancy. So something like 7 inches would be a good one.
Okay.
Yeah, I know when we would grow zucchini, if we let one get out of hand, Melanie would bring it in, and she'd just slice it about a 1/4 inch thick, coat them with olive oil, and then just throw them on the grill and grill them. And those never lasted. Once they were grilled, they were gone.
Because anything on the grill with salt, pepper, and garlic is good.
Yeah, you're
not going to go bad. Don't forget the
olive oil. Not going to go wrong with that.
The kitchen would probably frown on that idea.
You'd mentioned fruit trees. What fruit trees do you have at Poway Gardens?
We have a lot of citrus, and how was this year's citrus crop? With the people you've talked to, ours was way down this year.
It was down.
I was going to say mine was up this year from last year.
So maybe there is some alternating seasons with that. I don't know. I'm expecting a big one. We tend to notice that, like a flurry one year, then the next year down, then a flurry, then the next year down.
The mandarins are cyclic.
They're cyclical. I've been there almost 15 years. A tree dies, I'll put a tangerine in there and or mandarin, and we have kids that come. We have an intergenerational garden program where we have homeschool and preschool kids, and children love, and 80-year-old people with dementia issues love tangerines. So it's
and no teeth. You can just kind of gum away on these.
I picked up my grandson yesterday. He was taking him to practice, and I always have to like load up the back of the car with food, because he's even though he's only 6, he has this voracious appetite. And I grabbed a tangerine and then a bunch of mozzarella sticks and beef jerky, and he ate the tangerine. And he said, "You got any more of those?" And I said, "No." Got you covered next time.
Yeah, I've got a couple of Satsuma mandarins, which I grew up eating those, where my grandparents had a big tree in there. Well, big for a Satsuma. And our son loves them when they're right. You just walk out in the yard, grab a couple off of the tree. The skin falls off of them.
Yeah.
They're just fantastic eating.
That's why they like them.
Yeah, it's one of our favorites as well.
He also used to like calamundins. He would just go and pick a calamundin.
I have never heard anybody eat it, not even peel it, just eat it.
He liked them.
They're tart. Yeah,
we tend to have a few different varieties out there to extend the season when it's season. And I think Gold Nugget is the one we end the season with, and the Satsumas usually get the ball rolling.
December, January. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Honey mandarin will give you a really good late harvest too. Sometimes I'd have honeys into late May.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then we have a lot of, we have apples. When in doubt, I plant a tangerine or an apple. And the apple of that seems to do well for us is the Anna apple.
Mm-hmm. That's actually it's a really good apple.
Yeah.
Produces like crazy. I mean, it blooms almost all year round.
Yeah. We tend to get like two seasons out mm-hmm. of it, but they've got leaves now and they're setting fruit. And
that's my least favorite of all the apples that we have.
Yeah.
Huh. The Anna. It is a good apple.
It's a good apple.
My least favorite.
It's
effective on the coast.
It does very well. It's a very low chill. It's
extremely low chill.
It's actually an Israeli apple too from the Galilee up north. And same creator that created Anna created Ein Shemer.
Ein Shemer. Yeah. That was one that we used to carry Ein Shemer.
We carried it this year too.
Did we have it this year?
I had one at my other house. Yeah.
Would a gala be from the Galilee?
Galilee. Oh, that's good. I like that.
The one thing about Anna's though, you got to get them. There's a window where they're
it's Thursday through Saturday.
You're going to get mealy.
If you let them stay on the tree too long, they get kind of mealy.
They get harvested and eaten up really quick.
I say you probably harvest them the same time you're getting your zucchini. Get out there, mm-hmm. get it so you don't miss it.
Yeah. Our neighbors have we think it's an Anna because they said they said the fruit's terrible on it, but we've never seen them pick it. I think they let it stay on there for too long, but coyotes sure like it. We've seen coyotes in their yard jumping up and pulling the apples off of the tree. What other stone fruit do you have besides apples?
We have some I think we have some peaches and but mostly just apples and citrus. We have a few types. My favorite citrus of all is that Oro Blanco.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's my favorite. That by far, not even close, and not bad with tequila too. But
make a nice Paloma with
that. And then we got the navels and the Washingtons and the Valencias and some kumquats. Got the loquats coming in right now, and it's a variety.
Well, if you like the Oro Blanco, you've got to get yourself a Chandler Pomelo. Or a Valentine pomelo, or both.
Chandler and Pomelo. Oh, I'll remember those. Goodness. Next tree that goes down, I'll put one of those in.
I would definitely do that. And they're very vigorous, too.
I like the Valentine in particular. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, it's like 80% pith, but it's
but it's good for you.
There's really good fruit.
Yeah, but
in
it's
there,
the size of a volleyball.
Yeah, yeah.
It's funny you mentioned you having a terrible gopher problem this year. I have not. That's the first I've heard of gopher issues. I know last year Adams had a horrible time with gophers up at his place in Ramona. I think wasn't his count over 200?
Oh, I think he was in the 300s, because we were comparing notes. I had a bad year last year as well, but this year, I think they all went to your place because have been very, I've gotten one in the last 4 months, five months.
A lot of people I've talked to said they're having the same problems I am, but we're getting there. We're getting there. Uh-huh. We're attacking gophers and weeds. Once we get the weeds done, we're in good shape.
What is your favorite gopher trap to use?
The Maccabee.
Oh, okay. You're doing Maccabees. Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of people like the Maccabee. Yeah. Old mm-hmm. school. It's been around for 100+ years.
I'd like to get my hands on some strychnine and do that, but that's not very organic. So.
And I know, John, your favorite remains the gopher hawk? Or
most of the time. Yeah. Yeah. If the soil's conducive to it. Yeah.
I think winter is always... Winter and early spring have been my most successful times with the gopher hawk. Mm-hmm. Once you get into summer, you need something else.
Yeah, the Maccabees. That's usually I'm fortunate enough I don't have a gopher problem where I'm at because they can't really dig through rock. but the Maccabee is
it's that's surprising what kind of soil they can get you get going in.
Yeah, the Maccabee trap is a.
It's a classic.
Just classic, a little gruesome, but
extremely.
Extremely effective.
Make sure you check out the YouTube video on how to install them correctly so you don't impale your finger.
Yeah. You definitely want to be careful handling those.
This time of year, as we start moving into the warmer months, what kind of water schedule and how much water do you think you're giving those plants?
Well, we water every other day, regardless of what day of the year it is.
Okay.
So it's just, we have everything on drip irrigation. Which is the most efficient and it utilizes less water. It just makes a beautiful wetting pattern. And then we just control the time. So we're at 2.5 hours every other day right now, which sounds like a lot of water, but it's 0.5 gallons per 100 feet per minute or something like that. So it's really not that much.
Yeah. You know,
that's the only way to do it.
Yeah. That's usually the problem that we find when people come in and they're having irrigation issues, whether it's in a vegetable garden or in a regular landscape. Well, are you using sprinklers or are you using drip? Mm-hmm. And more often than not, when they're using drip, they only run it for 10 or 15 minutes at a time. Yeah. And it's not anywhere near.
And they have
near.
One or two emitters that are half-gallon emitters.
Right. Yeah.
That's not really enough.
It's not really going to do anything. So,
but your frequency is every other day, year-round.
Year-round. Wow. Well, unless we get a rain.
Okay.
Then everything gets shut down. The landscaping gets shut down. Everything gets shut down with the rain. So it's been a while since we've had to do that. And we could get a half inch of rain every week. That would be a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm.
You were saying lettuce. You grow lettuce year round?
We'll do 10 months out of the year.
10 months.
Wow.
So we start in August, late August, hiding it in between all our broccoli, cauliflower, and bok choy and thing like that. And then every week we plant 72 to 108 romaine. We plant green romaine. And we do that every week. So to try to have lettuce, I don't like them having to buy lettuce. I try to avoid that. And then we'll do that to the 1st of July. And I probably regret that last planting.
You're listening to Roy Wilburn, Farmer Roy, here on Garden Talk. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back with more Garden Talk. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Allman and John Clements, and our special guest, Farmer Roy from Poway Gardens. We were talking about lettuce when we went into the break, and I don't know if you heard, it was on one of the shows a while back. George had brought up one of his gardening is it traditions classes about
folklore
gardening. Thomas Jefferson would start. It was at end of February.
He would start in February. You have one thimbleful.
A thimbleful of lettuce seed
every week until autumn.
I think he was on the right idea.
That's a lot of lettuce. A thimbleful of lettuce. Yeah. That's a lot of seed.
So he's got to thin that out. I hate that.
So you don't plant one seed at the appropriate spot?
No, I go to a friendly nursery in town here, Walter Anderson's, and I get two flats of romaine lettuce. That's the only crop we buy. And
all from color packs?
All from Sixers.
Wow. Yeah.
We found an interesting short on YouTube about 15 heirloom vegetables that nobody grows anymore. Oh. One of the ones that was on there, and it was one that Thomas Jefferson grew, was tennis ball lettuce. And it forms leaf lettuce, forms small round heads, a little bigger than a tennis ball.
I had the opportunity when my daughter was pitching for the University of Virginia to go to Monticello, and he was onto something. That guy was special.
It was, that's a pretty amazing.
Yeah, player.
He was a brilliant man.
Yeah, that and Mount Vernon.
As
we've said before.
Yeah, that is just.
I think he went broke, right? But
yeah. Jefferson. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he did.
Well, for those that don't know, I mean, Roy does one of the best classes at Walter Anderson Nursery's usual Saturday classes, always well attended, and certainly you're fabulous with all the brassicas and the lettuces and everything, but really for me it's always been with Roy, it's tomato Roy.
Yeah.
And for those of you that don't know Baja much, I was going to Baja in the 70s in a place called San Quintin. There was nobody in San Quintin in the 70s. One of the finest places to fish I have ever seen, ever. And there are huge, huge ranches with tomatoes down there. And that's kind of where Roy got to start. And so I have a question about tomatoes.
Okay.
VFN. And what do you do about all the VFN? And kind of give us a little schooling on what that means and how you're dealing with it.
So VFN. So every tomato plant should have a little stake in it. And if it doesn't have a bunch of letters after the name of the variety, then you will Google it on your phone and find out what those letters, how many there are. And V is for verticillium and F is for fusarium. And VFF means fusarium too also. N, the nemesis of all time on tomatoes, is nematodes. T, tobacco mosaic, and then stemphylium and alternaria, alternata. There's a whole series of diseases that if you're a commercial grower, you don't want any verticillium, and you don't want any fusarium, and you don't want any nematodes. And you know, for us in San Quintin, a big one was TMV, the tobacco mosaic virus. So the more letters after the name of the variety, the better it is. So that's generally things you'll notice on hybrids and select varieties. Things like heirloom, there won't be any letters after it.
And, so you'll have better success with the more letters, typically?
I just, truthfully, at the scale I'm doing right now, as long as I don't plant a tomato unless it's in our children's garden, which is exclusively cherry tomatoes, they all got to have nematode resistance, and then we back it up with beneficial nematodes.
Okay, and you're inoculating when you're planting.
So I put the holes in the ground, and then I go to Walter Anderson's, and I get my beneficial nematodes. The root knot, was it fungal gnat and root knot extractor or exterminator?
Exterminator,
and just whip it up and pour it in the holes, and then I plant right on top of it and cover it up and. We haven't had any problems. I mean, you will, even though a variety has resistance to something, does not mean that it will not hit it.
Right.
But you will get a crop. You will get a crop off.
Well, yeah. For folks that don't know, TMV, tobacco mosaic virus, I was in the orchid business many years ago, and we would not hire people that smoked.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, we would... I mean, and we'd have people wash their hands. We bleached our hands when they come in because it can actually adhere to your clothing. It adheres to your hands. And then you go having a nice smoke and you come and touch the orchid. Boom, you've just infected that sucker.
Yeah.
So we literally wouldn't hire people that smoked.
Yeah. We had warnings too.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting with over the years as technology has improved, printing technology has improved, almost all the bedding plants that you get now have a picture tag in them.
Correct.
But a long time ago, early in my career, picture tags were non-existent. Because
and when they did come out, it was broccoli.
Yeah. But when it came to tomatoes, the VFNT designation on the tomato varieties was much more prominent on the printed labels than it is on the picture labels now. And I think I don't know that some of the growers even put that the plants are still resistant, but that is not that's not necessarily noted. But that was always a big thing 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
It was at the very top of the label. The the printing was horizontal on the label, but at the very top, perpendicular to the printing, was where they would put the designation. That was the first, that was the first thing that you see. And as you were shopping, you could easily just go through and identify the ones that had more resistance to them than others.
I have a question too about, in fact, a lady this morning before we were recording, she brought in a little infected leaf and, you know, and Tim Connolly was a friend too up in Ramona.
Oh, I know him.
Blight. What do you do with early blight?
Early blight.
Yeah.
You wait for the weather to change or use, in the world of organics, you use copper spray.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I told
them. I really don't even worry about it. That one I don't. When late blight hit us in San Quintin, that we lost millions when that came to fruition, and that spreads like literally like wildfire through your garden. I mean, you got 100 hectare of tomatoes and starts at one end and you come back next day and it's already halfway through. That's devastating.
Mm. So liquid cop you're using on
liquid cop and, that, what is it? Funganex, but that's not organic. Yeah, right.
Deconil is another one.
Deconil is great. That's Bravo. In our world, it was known as Bravo and chlorothalonil, I think, is the active ingredient.
Yeah. Used to use Serenade. That was an organic.
Serenade was a bacteria. Awesome that was one great. That was when I used to spray zucchini. Mm-hmm. That was what I used to use. And then I've tried every other witch's brew that, you know, you just basically calcium carbonate or baking soda. You try to increase the pH on the leaves so the mycelia don't do what they're doing. But that's a tough one.
Serenade was great. It was a bacteria. It was a Bacillus subtilis or something.
That's correct. Correct.
Liquid cop is not an organic one though. You have to use the bonide makes it liquid, a copper that's organic.
There you go.
But going back to nematodes, because we said there are beneficial nematodes and bad nematodes. We didn't say what nematodes are. So
they're a little microscopic worm that are in the soil and you don't see them. And the thing I tell people in the class is the most important thing you do other than eating the tomatoes is when you pull that plant out, check the roots. And then if you have nematodes in that spot, the backyard grower generally has like a tomato here and a tomato there. It's not like linear rows with 67 plants per 100 feet. But when you pull it out, take a look at the roots. And you're not sure what root knot nematode looks like.
You'll know.
Google it.
You'll know.
You go, this is not healthy.
This is not normal.
And I tell you the story I tell a lot is when I was first getting started here in Poway, somebody gave me like 100 plants of a variety called Delicious. And I thought, okay, what the hell? I mean, I was still searching for the variety for our area. And I put that in, didn't get one tomato off. I immediately pulled them all out and I planted Celebrities right in that same row. And we got like 1,000, 1,200 pounds, something like out of that row.
That's a great tomato.
That was my grandmother's favorite tomato.
Yeah, that was actually named on our ranch in Baja.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, wow. I used to trial for all the seed companies, the big seed companies. They would come down.
Early Girl is another one I always have had.
That's my favorite.
Great luck with.
It's the most beautiful tomato. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not big. It's medium at best, but everyone looks like it came out of a cookie cutter. They're beautiful. Mm-hmm. They're beautiful tomatoes.
Perfect.
Has some nematode resistance. Uh-huh. I think they call it nematode susceptibility.
Yeah, I don't know how. A few years ago, we have a planting bed in our backyard that would grow that we'd plant every year. And one year the tomatoes just didn't do very well, and pulled them out. And sure enough, nematodes have gotten into it. I don't know how or where they can. Never had a problem before.
Yeah. You can deny it.
Yeah. They're there already.
They're there already. Yeah. And we notice it in Swiss chard too. It's
really
Swiss chard really loves it.
And, I've not seen that.
Sometimes I'll get it on zucchinis too.
The zucchini. I mean, anything that you're growing that warm season.
Yeah.
Then they multiply so fast. Yeah. So zucchini and tomatoes, of course, peppers, and
solanaceae,
eggplant, solanaceae, and eggplant. can, but it's not a problem. The one with, that we focus on is tomatoes. Mm. I mean, the zucchini plant.
Now, I always tell people they need to rotate their crops. But clearly, if you're a farmer, you can't rotate your hectares. And
when I was a commercial grower, I mean, that hill was tomatoes.
Every year.
And then next year, that hill was tomatoes. And even in my setup with 40, 50-foot rows, and we'll plant, 16 to 20 plus 25 rows maybe throughout the course of the year of tomatoes. It's just mathematically impossible for them to not. Plus, I got my spots where I like to grow my tomatoes, and they've been tomatoes for the last 15 years. And
We are talking vegetable gardening with Farmer Roy from Poway Gardens. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
There's more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, George Allman, and John Clements.
And we're back. And we've been talking tomatoes with Farmer Roy.
It always comes back to tomatoes.
It's always the maters.
Now, you had told me at one time, there's determinate and indeterminate varieties of tomatoes. The determinants basically produce all at one time, and then the indeterminates will produce for a much longer period. You like determinate varieties.
I like the determinate. I like when it's not really true that everything comes off all at one time, but it's a shorter harvest season than an indeterminate. If you plant, your indeterminates with your determinants, like in March, we strive to have tomatoes from our determinants through sometime in August, them petering out, but you'll get a couple extra months for sure. And then again, there's those people that love to carry on over there through December into February with their indeterminates, and not a big fan of that. I like to do subsequent successive planting after that. So that way, when they're in, they're in.
Yeah. I've never had good luck growing winter tomatoes.
No,
it
the waste.
Not
of
a
time.
Big fan. Yeah, I'm not. And their varieties they tout as cold season tomatoes.
San Francisco fog.
Cold season tomatoes just doesn't sound right.
No,
I mean you're better served through putting some kale in or something. I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, switch over to the brassicas.
Yeah, yeah.
The cool season vegetables. And
Roy's actually going to teach a brassica class here in Poway in August.
Nice. Very good. Oh, yeah, that's what we got. So surprisingly enough, somewhere in June, I'll be seeding for August planting.
Wow.
Now, it gets really hot here in July and August and sometimes September. And earlier you mentioned that you don't do lettuce primarily because it gets too hot.
Yeah, I'll stop our lettuce plantings at the end of June. Sometimes I'll drift into July, and then I regret those last 2 weeks of planting. But, you could see lettuce melt. It just turned to seed in three days. Now there are warm season types of lettuce, which you can switch to. But we like the romaine, and so if I have 10 months out of the year with nice fresh romaine for the kitchen, I'm a happy camper.
And when they get hot and they start to bolt, and then you get that latex white nasty, milky stuff out of the lettuce. That's not good.
And it's just bitter. It just doesn't taste. I mean, the reason we grow a romaine is it's very common and it's very delicious and it's super nutritious for you.
Okay. You know, I was at Dixie Line the other day buying some supplies and a tomato I grew maybe 20, 25 years ago. And I had looked for it for a long time, couldn't find it. It's pink Caspian. And it was one of my favorite tomatoes of all time. Really productive, delicious. They had them at Dixie Line in little 4 inches. And I hadn't seen it in 20 or 25 years.
Yeah.
And another tomato I loved was Thessaloniki. And I actually went to Thessaloniki once. And I thought, this is where the tomato's from. So what
is
are
Greece or something?
Yeah, it is between Albania and Greece. Did you Macedonia.
Did you purchase both of those?
I didn't. No, because I'm tempted to go back though. Okay. But what are your favorite tomatoes that we can get?
Yeah.
And then maybe what are the favorite tomatoes that are legendary and maybe apocryphal, sort of like pink Caspian, that if you could get, you'd want back?
Well, again, I like determinants. I like to grow a lot with great disease resistance. And I was thrown a curveball at the end of mid-season last year. Because my go-to variety was one called BHN 1021 and from Johnny's Selected Seed. And then all of a sudden it was discontinued. So I unfortunately went to Amazon and I found some, supposedly, and it was nowhere near. It was some horrific plant that produced the ugliest fruit I've ever seen. So word to the wise, stick with your reliable vendors of plants such as Walter Anderson's or seed companies such as Johnny's and Territorial and Burpees and Gurney's and all those. So that was my favorite. So this year I'm trialing four different ones, but the one that we've been very successful at the end of the year is one called Mountain Fresh, and it'll be the biggest tomato we grow all year long. And we plant that at the end of the year because it's a relatively short plant and it grows very tall. Tall enough in our Poway weather.
So I understand you're only planting four varieties in the entire.
I planted four varieties in my early, and I will whittle that down to one. And hopefully. And so I got one called Galahad, one called Skyway, which I've grown that one in the past, and then Celebrity, of course. And there's a Celebrity Plus out now. So I think that's what I put in, and that's supposed to have a little bit better size. I like size, I like big tomatoes. But to answer your question, my favorite varieties, other than those for looking at a plant through commercial growers' eyes, there's a number of cherry tomatoes that you know that just really get me excited. And
now, which are your favorite cherries?
Well, we do a taste test in June with June and July with our kids in our intergenerational program. And we will have this year we have only 8 varieties in because I went stronger on some were perennial winners. And of course, Sun Gold. There's nobody in the world that doesn't like Sun Gold cherry tomatoes. And then there was one called Five Star that we have in there that won the last couple of years in the red category. And then there's one called Sun Peach. I really love that one's good. And then I like the black cherry. I mean, the old black cherry is a good one too, but there's so many different aspects to tomato flavor that everybody's got a different opinion, but everybody likes Sun Gold. It's the sweetest one. Yeah. If you want to get kids excited about eating vegetables, grow a Sun Gold cherry tomato in your backyard. And next thing you know, they'll be eating cauliflower and kale right off the plant. You know, when we have kids that just pull leaves off plants and eat them, even if it's like cauliflower. But and as far as heirlooms, there's Costoluto.
That's one of my favorites.
Oh, Costoluto Genovese.
Yeah, that's
a great one.
And black creme and Cherokee purple. Taste buds tend to like the purplish ones.
Have you done Principe di Borghese, the one from Italy for the sun-dried tomatoes?
No.
It's very short little plant, maybe 3-4 feet high tops. And they're a big kind of a plum tomato, but almost no seed, no juice in them. Very dry. And they make such a good sun-dried tomato.
Good.
They're really good.
Sounds awesome.
Going back to the heat, though, because what I wanted to try to get into before we lose you today is, as we approach summer, what mitigating steps do you take for all your other plants as it gets super hot?
So when it gets hot, We use a black shade cloth, 40 or 50% black shade cloth. And it just takes a little bit of the sting out of it. Tomatoes will start to, flowers will start to dry up at 85 degrees. And then you can actually get fruit scalds in the 90s, which is a common occurrence every day for like 3 months here. So we just drape it right over the steaks. And we're all, most of my rows, I inherited the design of my garden, and all the rows are going east-west. So everything on the south side of those tomato rows tend to be can burn here in August and September. And so, but we just draped the shade cloth on, and it's it does a great job. Our Asian Oriental, our Oriental eggplant, which is a big one for us, that doesn't seem, the sun doesn't seem to cause a problem with that, and we grow that at the same time. Zucchini doesn't care. Peppers, I mean, it's very easy to grow. Well, it's relatively easy to grow green peppers. It's that extra 3 weeks to get them to turn red, which we like. That insects got three more weeks to find them, and the sun's got and they sunscald very easily. So we cover those with black. I mean, I got, they're covered right now, and then all my brassica that we plant in August and September and part of October, we cover with black.
How about cucumbers?
What do you do? Cucumbers, we actually plant, we put black shade cloth on the row covers on our cucumbers when we. We plant them right the first day of planting, because those are extremely tender, and some weird fluctuation in the temperature, they'll just dry up immediately. So we keep that on for a couple of weeks until we start to see, then we start to see flowers, and we try to open them up then. But even my, I've got three plantings of cucumbers in right now, and we have, I just pulled the black off that again, so we can at least see the gophers working in the garden. Yeah, it was like horrible.
What, talking about peppers, how many varieties of peppers do you grow?
There's two that I really like, because we were the first to actually grow red peppers in Baja, and they come from an Israeli company, and it's called Maccabi and Sinai. And you can't get it. You have, I call every year and say, hey, I got a garden, and can you please? And I used to grow this and Baja. And anyway, those are, and they're the Lemuya type. They're the big, big elongated ones. The ones that are popular. When this came out in the 90s, that the elongated reds, those are good ones. But we're growing one called King Arthur that you can get the seed from Johnny's and other seed companies, and it's actual bell pepper. So, and they're very thick walled, very, very delicious. And we'll do like six plantings a year of peppers starting in February, and February, March, April, boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, there was a couple of heirloom peppers that we ran across. One of them we have the seed for here, Jimmy Nardello Italian frying pepper. Oh. That's a long, thin red pepper, supposed to be super sweet.
And that sounds yummy.
Excellent for frying. And then the other one was one that goes dated back to, I think it was Thomas Jefferson grew also bullnose pepper, which is basically a bell pepper, but both are heirloom varieties. So I've got the seed for the Jimmy Nardellos at home. I'm going to try planting some of those and see.
Yeah, every time he went to Europe, he must have just stuffed his.
Yeah, his Jimmy Nardello. He's one of the paisans.
Yeah. And are your nasty hot peppers in right now? Do we have?
We have some out there. We don't have the high. I don't recall if I saw any ghosts yesterday, but we do have some of the hotter, hotter varieties. And as you know, when it's warmer, we get the hotter.
Yeah. So, we'll put in about a dozen there.
And here's a summer question: when do you water? What time of day during your summer?
First thing in the morning.
You've been listening to Garden Talk, and our special guest, Roy Wilburn from Poway Gardens. We're going to be back next week with another hour. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, independent and family-owned since 1928. For more information about plants, products, expert advice, news, classes, podcasts, and more, visit walteranderson.com.